Okay, today is Srimad Bhagavatam, but you already knew that part, right? Chapter 1, text 20. Got that? Okay, thanks. Okay, hold on, as soon as I get it. Wow, this is like elevation in Krishna consciousness is right here. Okay, 20, 30, 20, 22, 21, 20. Okay, this chapter is the story of Ajamil. But we're not really going to talk about Ajamil today. We're going to talk about something else. We're going to talk about the Puranas. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Ram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tojayam Udirayat. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttamashloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad, we can say this together since it's all there. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotee. All that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay, so text 20 of the first chapter of the sixth canto, and the chapter is called History of the Life of Ajamil. So you probably heard of Ajamil and his life of... He had a very nice life in the beginning, raised by good parents, good Brahminical parents, and he was studying the Brahminical principles. And he was very sincere, made lots of progress, until in his youth, when he had some difficulties and fell down, left everything, totally everything, everything, all the principles that his father taught him, all the religious principles, lived with a prostitute, had 10 children from her. And even in his old age, he was like 88 years old when the crux of this story is taking place. And he has a young son, young, like a toddlery type of a son. And he's, although not thinking that he's ever going to die, death hasn't forgotten him, comes to take him away. And it just so happens that, not by chance, because nothing happens by chance, but it just so happens that by Krishna's arrangement, due to his sincere efforts in the beginning of his life, he had named his youngest son Narayan. So, as any new parent can tell you, then he's always talking about Narayan. He's always calling him, Narayan, come here. Narayan, take your food. Narayan, stop doing that. Narayan this, Narayan that. He's always chanting the name of Narayan. And so when he's lying on his deathbed and the Yamadutas, the agents of Yamaraj, come to take him out of his, take his subtle body out of his gross body. In other words, you know, it's time for him to die. He sees this horrible form of the Yamadutas come, and he's fearful for his son. He's afraid of it for his son. He calls Narayan. And then you have to find out what happens, in case you don't know. But this is the very beginning of this story. This is the very beginning of this story. It tells where and how this story was related. So here's our verse. Atra chodaharantimam. Atra Chodaharantimam Itihasam Puratanam Itihasam Puratanam Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo Samvadastvam Nibodhame Samvadastvam Nibodhame Atra Chodaharantimam Itihasam Puratanam Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo Samvadastvam Nibodhame. Please chant.
Chodaharantimam
Itihasam Puratanam
Itihasam Puratanam
Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo
Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo
Samvadastam Nibodhame
Samvadastam Nibodhame
Atra Chodaharantimam
Itihasam Puratanam
Vishnu Yamayo Samvada Samnibodhame Atra Chodaharantimam Itihasam Purantanam Dutanam Vishnu Yamayo Samvada Samnibodhame Atra
in this connection.
Cha,
also,
Udharanti,
they give as an example,
imam,
this,
itihasam,
the history of Ajamil,
Purantanam,
which is very old,
Dutanam,
of the order carriers,
Vishnu,
of Lord Vishnu,
Yamayo,
and of Yamaraj,
Samvada,
the discussion,
Tvam,
that,
Nibodha,
try to understand,
May,
from me.
Translation
and purport by Srila
Prabhupada.
In this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons described a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraj. Please hear of this from me. Let's repeat this. In this regard,
learned scholars and saintly persons
described a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu
and those of Yamaraj.
Please hear of this from me.
Please hear of this from me.
Purport. The Puranas, or old histories, are sometimes neglected by unintelligent men who consider their descriptions mythological. Actually, the descriptions of the Puranas, or the old histories of the universe, are factual, although not chronological. The Puranas record the chief incidents that have occurred over many millions of years, not only on this planet, but also on other planets within the universe. Therefore, all learned and realized Vedic scholars speak with references to the incidents in the Puranas. Srila Rupa Goswami accepts the Puranas to be as important as the Vedas themselves. Therefore, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he quotes the following verse from the Brahma Yamala. Smriti Purana Di Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhakter Utpatyayai Vakalpate. Devotional service to the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. A devotee of Krishna must refer not only to the Vedas, but also the Puranas. One should not foolishly consider the Puranas mythological. If they were mythological, Shukadev Goswami would not have taken the trouble to recite the old historical incidents concerning the life of Ajamil. That's Srila Prabhupada's great faithful logic. His logic, he's very logical, but it's also based on faith. He has complete faith in the scriptures. If it was mythological, Sukadeva Goswami wouldn't take the trouble to recite it because he's a great soul. He's not interested in nonsense mythological. That's how Prabhupada would pronounce it sometimes. Mythology. Now the history begins as follows, which we're not going to talk about. We're going to talk about history a little teeny weeny weeny bit. Om Agyana Timirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chaksu Umilitam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So what do you remember that we just read? This is a participatory class, you have to remember that. So what do you remember from anything that struck you, particularly Krishna Kripaji? Aha. Uh-huh. And that translation is, can you pass the mic down, Rupa Chandraji?
Yeah, the devotional service that's not based on the Shruti Smriti Puranas and the Narada Pancharatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in human society.
What? Can you give an example what that means? Can you explain that? What does that mean?
Like the Sahajiyas who think they've already have an intimate relationship with Radha and Krishna when they still have many material desires in their hearts.
Yeah, practical. Like we have to understand practically what it means to how we are supposed to be guiding our life through Krishna consciousness. We're supposed to be guiding our life and our activities based on instructions in the Shastras, and that way we're on a safe road. Anything else strike you that you can remember from that extremely long purport? Gopal?
Well, just the Prabhupada says over and over again, it's not mythology.
Yeah, it's not mythology. It's history. And it's history. So, Puranas, Vedas. It's a term that we use, oftentimes we use it loosely, Vedic, the Vedic literature. Do we have a conception of what that means, what it involves? I just happen to have a nice little pass-out chart, which now you can pass it out. I didn't want you to pass it out earlier because I didn't want you to be looking at it too soon. So this is a chart that we use in our Bhakti Shastri courses because we talk a lot about Vedic literature, right? But we don't really have a conception what that encompasses. Vedic literature, we might think, is like Encyclopedia Britannica double, let's say. But here, this is a giving, this is not listing all the Vedic literatures. This is not listing the Vedic the books. This is listing the topics that are covered. Topics, a term that I'm using. It's not the different books. But let's look at the first thing. So Vedic knowledge, right on the top of the page. Is there enough for everybody? Clayton didn't get his paper yet. Is there one for him? Is there one for, yeah, okay. Everybody got them? All right. We have to thank Nimai Pandit for coming through on that one. Thank you. And there's one more if you'd like to grab it, Pratik. So look at from the top, okay? So Vedic literature is immediately divided into two categories of literature, Shruti and Smriti. Who can tell me what Shruti means? Rupa, Chandra. Heard. It's heard. Any other characteristics? From the disciplic succession, right. And if you see there, it says, it's every word is unchanged eternally. Every word is unchanged eternally. So there's Vedic mantras like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. They always stay that way. Or other ones. There's many, many of them. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Or like even like Lord Brahma's prayers, the Brahma Samhita, that existed since his enlightenment in the beginning of creation. All of those, Prabhupada quotes from them quite often, Ishvara Parama Krishna, whatever, all of those verses, all of those words, all of those mantras stay the same. Now, people have commented on them and made literature that explain them, and that's called Smriti. So there's Shruti, which is heard. It comes from what? Alparushaya, source that's not material. That every word stays the same eternally. And then there's the sages who take that knowledge, they assimilate that knowledge, and then they speak on that. That's Smriti, from their realization. Composed by the sages, see up there? Words may change from time to time. So there's Shruti and Smriti. Smriti means to remember. And this probably means other meanings too, but anyway. So Shruti and Smriti. So then there's these major divisions in Shruti, the Vedas, Upavedas, Vedangas. And so the Vedas originally we remember from first canto Srimad Bhagavatam when Vyasadeva is contemplating his dissatisfaction after he compiled all the Vedic literature. Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedic literature. Because why? Because he could see that previously people heard the Vedic literatures and they could remember it. They only needed to hear from the sages, from the authorized person, and they could remember. But Vyasadeva, because he was Trikalagya, he could see the past, he could see the present, and he could see the future and what the qualities of the people in the future would be. He could understand that people were that were going to be less intelligent. They weren't going to be able to understand things as quickly. And so he saw the need of writing the Vedic literature down. Oftentimes, from an anthropological point of view, right? Not based on the scriptures, from a scientific point of view, based on the senses, they're looking at history and they're seeing when were books recorded, when were this and this and that, so many things. And they're looking and seeing, from their speculation, they're seeing that people were less intelligent in the past and are more intelligent in the future, but now, in the present. But actually, people were more intelligent in the past, and as a sign of the coming of less capacity to understand, things were written down. And we can see, we can see even ourselves, we often experience ourselves, we've got the words right in front of us and we're reading it incorrectly. We're not even, our capacity is quite different, quite less. So Vyasadeva, so that was in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is considering why he feels dissatisfaction after compiling all the Vedic literatures. And at that time, very timely entrance of Narada Muni, his spiritual master, and he says, yeah, you are feeling dissatisfaction because you haven't glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly enough. You haven't done that sufficiently. You've made all these rules and regulations for people in different stages of life. Like you'll see in, let's say, on the Smriti side, on the right side, there's the ritual sutras, there's the tantras, and they're in tamas, rajas, and sattvic modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. There's the pancha, there's so many things. Even in the Puranas, there's Puranas that for different people in different stages of life. one might question why there's such a variety of Vedic literature. Because there are different Vedic literature, the different, in some of the books they're glorifying Indra, some of the books are glorifying Lord Shiva, some of the, they're glorifying different things. Why, oftentimes someone might question why there's so much variety there. And even they might question as the value of religion when there's so much so many different religious philosophies that apparently contradict each other or this or that. Does anybody have an explanation as to that variety? Pratik Ji, can Krishna Kripa Prabhu, can you pass the mic? Or
different people have different degrees of diseases, you can say. So to cure them, there is a whole bunch of pharmacy.
Correct. Pharmacy, right. Okay, that's a good point. If you were going to, if you had a cold and you go to the pharmacy and he says, okay, here's, take the pill. And you go, and then you have a pain in your leg, and the pharmacy gives the pharmacist gives the same pill to the next guy, and the next guy, and then someone says, "Well, how come? Well, we only have one pill here. Just take it; it's going to cure everything." You think, but because so can you elaborate a little bit more what that means? People have different varieties of diseases, so there's different varieties. Can you just elaborate a few more sentences what that means?
People have different kinds of desires. Some people,
that's it.
Some people want more material opulence for them. Karma Kanda section is there. Some people are inquisitive and they want jnana for them. Vedas.
Exactly.
The flowery language out there.
Exactly. And if because people have different desires, there's something for everybody. There's something for everybody in the Vedas. And the purpose is to where you're at, wherever you're at, if you want all material enjoyment, if you want knowledge, or if you want heavenly pleasure, or whatever, this or that, there's something to take you in the Vedas from where you are at, and gradually elevate you slowly, slowly to a more complete understanding. Slowly. And that's the purpose of the Karma Kanda section. Gradually, gradually, by following these ritualistic programs, one becomes a little bit thoughtful and thinks, well, why am I doing this if all I'm going to do is get elevated to the heavenly planets and then ultimately what? Have to come back down. I'll go up and come down. So it's not really relief. It's not a permanent solution. It's only a temporary solution. And then one thinks, isn't there something more? Gradually. So there's an example that Srila Prabhupada gives in Shrisha Upanishad, it's just my favorite example. Can you guess what it is about going up and coming down?
Ferris wheel?
I didn't hear you.
A Ferris wheel?
It's, yeah, but he doesn't say that one. It's the cockroaches in the commode. That's, it's thanks. I'm thinking, whoa! Okay, in Shrisha Upanishad, Prabhupada gives the example of a coconut. That the coconut has a hard shell on the outside, the green coconut. The brown is inside. So the green coconut has a hard shell, and inside is the brown shell, and inside there's the water and whatever space. So he compares the material world to a coconut. It has the layers, the material coverings are on the outside. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. All those are layers. On the outside of each universe, in each layer is 10 times thicker than the previous layer. So it's dark. So therefore, the sun and the moon have to be inside every coconut, every universe, to give light, because the material world is full of darkness. So if somebody's making progress by following, let's say, Karma Kanda and being elevated to the heavenly planets, and staying there for an extraordinary amount of time, and then falling down to a lower planet or whatever, having to do more penances and austerities in order to maintain. But ultimately, what are they doing? They're traveling up and around inside that coconut. So it might seem like progress, but it's not really progress, because you never pierce through the coverings of material existence and get to a permanent solution. So back to Vyasadeva contemplating why he doesn't feel satisfied. Narada Muni points out, you're feeling dissatisfied. In fact, you've actually more or less cheated the people, because they're thinking they'll take the rituals to be more important than the goal. And so unless you glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, then you're not going to be satisfied. And so then that's when Vyasadeva compiles Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Mahapurana. It's the Bhagavat Purana. It's of that Purana of old histories, but all focused on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his relationship with his devotees, etc., etc., etc. So it was described there in the first, I think it's sixth chapter, but could be wrong. But anyway, first canto, the first beginning chapters, that something, can't remember what I was going to say. The Bhagavatam is the cream of all the Vedic literatures. It's the essence. He's taken, and so we didn't even go over. I mean, like I said, these are just categories of information that the Vedas cover. Detailed information on this and that and so many things. But the essence of the Vedic message is that this body is a temporary vehicle, and the soul is the eternal, the eternal particle that needs to be connected with the Supreme, and this is the way to do it. Do it this way. Don't waste your, like, I'm sure you've heard some Vedic mantras, these short little mantras that tell you, now you've come to the human form of life. Come to the light. Don't stay in the darkness. You know that mantra? That's true. That one. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah, there's so many of them. Come to the light. Don't waste your human form of life. And so that in itself doesn't explain everything, but it's, what's it called? Aphorism, but it's also sutras. Thank you. Sutras. It's compressed. The information is lots and lots of information. It's compressed into that. Now you've come to the human form of life. Come to the light. Don't waste it. So unless you've heard from the previous authorities, you kind of read that in, perhaps it would just go over your head. But actually what's explained, there's a difference between the soul and the body. There's, you know, this higher goal, there's spirit. You know, all of that is compressed. And by saying in those ways, they're bringing the attention of the living entity to their spiritual goals in life. So, Puranas. Now we're talking about Srimad Bhagavatam as the cream, the essence, the of all the Vedic literature. And again, when you look over this chart and get a little glimpse of all that's there in the Vedas, again, what sprouts up in my heart is an appreciation for what Srila Prabhupada has done for us. You know, what he's done, because studying this Vedic literature, it's lifetimes of study, right? Lifetimes of study. And to come to the right conclusion and this and that. And here Srila Prabhupada has presented Srimad Bhagavatam and given us the essence all right there. And in that process, then we're understanding, somewhat from the Pancharatra, somewhat from the different aspects of the Vedas, somewhat of this and that. But what are we getting? We're getting that 100% focus on Krishna, on bhakti, as a means of getting out and developing our love for Krishna and getting out of this material world. And he's presented in a way for people who have no conception. We're so far from Vedic culture in the West. It's like amazing. And somehow or other, we can get a glimpse of it by Srila Prabhupada's kindness and his potency. So in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter, 2:10:1, I think it is. What's this one? Oh, Okay, before I go to 210.1, which describes the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's also another reference to the Puranas that I'm going to read a little, an excerpt from the first canto, from the fourth chapter, 14th verse, when the sages, so we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Sukadev, Maharaj Parikit inquiring from Sukadev. From that, when Sukadev was speaking, in that audience was Shonaka Rishi. And was it Shonaka was in that audience? Oh. Huh? He was a spokesman. So who was the other one? Sutta, thanks. Anyway, so he hears it, and then he speaks, and Shonaka asks him questions. And so when the sages in that second audience, they're together, they're speaking to Sutta Goswami, they say to him, they say, "We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects except some portion of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you," because they're also asking Sutta what different things. So Prabhupada says there in the purport, he says, the difference between the Vedas and the Puranas is like the difference between the Brahmins and the Parivrakacharyas. The Brahmins are meant to administer some fruit of sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas, but the Parivrakacharyas, or learned preachers, are meant to disseminate transcendental knowledge to one and all. As such, the Parivrakacharyas are not always expert in pronouncing the Vedic mantras, which are practiced systematically by accent and meter by the Brahmins who are meant for administering Vedic rites. Just an aside, when you get the chance to visit Vrindavan, right outside the Krishna Balaram Mandir on the Parikram Marg, on the left-hand side there. Anyway, there's a school of local Brahmins. The little boys go to school there, and you can hear them chanting their mantras all the time. they practice the mantra, they practice the accent, they practice the meter, and they practice to say the mantra perfectly. And we've heard the result of that in other places in the Bhagavatam, that if one can chant the mantras perfectly, in fact, and one can do a Vedic ritual perfectly, then if that's a type of a sacrifice where there's an animal that's sacrificed, that animal right in front of the audience will take on a new form, a new life. And that shows the efficacy of the Vedic mantras. So Prabhupada would say, but that's not possible in this day and age. And neither is it our emphasis. So our emphasis is on chanting the Lord's holy name and trying to develop love for him. That's our emphasis. So Prabhupada showed how that was his, what he was teaching us when he installed Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan, in the deities in Vrindavan. He had the local Brahmins come and chant the mantras and do days and days of ritualistic ceremonies that he sat through and attended. But on the side, the devotees were chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and Prabhupada was very happy with that and considered that chanting of the Hare Krishna Mantra, that was what really called the deities there. So anyway, that was a little bit on systematic chanting. So what's Prabhupada comparing the difference between Brahmins? The Brahmins and the Parivrakacharyas are the difference between the Vedas and the Puranas. The Vedas are giving technical knowledge. The Puranas often give the essence. They're meant for the preacher is preaching them, so he's comparing it like that. So he continues, yet it should not be considered that the Brahmins are more important than the itinerant preachers. They are one and different simultaneously because they are meant for the same end, but in different ways. There is no difference between the Vedic mantras as explained in the Puranas and the Itihasas. And I'm going to just skip down. Okay. The only difference is that the Vedic mantras are mostly begun with the pranava omkar, and it requires some training to practice the metric pronunciation of the Vedic mantras. But that does not mean that Srimad Bhagavatam is less important than the Vedic mantras. On the contrary, it is the ripened fruit of all the Vedas, as stated before. Besides that, the most perfectly liberated soul, Srila Sukadeva, is absorbed in the studies on the Bhagavatam, although he is already self-realized. Realization is more important than parrot-like chanting. So that's what Prabhupada's emphasizing there. And he emphasizes it throughout all of his purports. So there's a little bit more information that's given in the Bhagavatam on the Puranas and the different subjects that the Puranas, because there's different types of Puranas. There's ordinary Puranas, and there's Upa Puranas, and there's Maha Puranas, and they all have different characteristics. And just briefly, we'll go from to the second canto, tenth chapter, first verse, where Sukadeva Goswami is explaining what are the topics that characterize Srimad Bhagavatam, that are included in Srimad Bhagavatam. And those topics characterize Mahapurana. 10 topics: Atrasargo, Visargas, Chas, Stanam, Poshanam, Uttaya, Manvantare, Shanukata, Nirodho, Mukti, Ashraya. Sukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the creation of the universe and the secondary creation or the sub-creation, the planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of Manus, the science of God, and returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum. So it's little technical knowledge. Are you there? Oh, good. Thank you. Great. Okay. So, and then the next few verses explain those different topics in a little bit more detail. Srimad Bhagavatam contains all 10 of these topics. It creates, like, second and third cantos explain the creation. They explain the creation by the Lord, and the sub-creation, Visha-Atra-Sarga, Visharga-Scha, they say the sub-creation by Brahma. Once the elements are there, what does Brahma do with them? The Brahma's creation, the Lord's creation. Then it goes on and explains so many other things. Like the ninth canto, all the list of the dynasties, how time is marching on, list of the dynasties, and so many things. On the incarnations, the list of incarnations are there. And Poshanam. Poshanam is the protection by the Lord. So this story of Ajamil, do you not get into the story, right? We're just talking on the subject matter? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So in this story of Ajamil, it's giving many topics intertwined, but primarily how the Lord protects his devotees. He's protecting us all the time. And as we in our lives train ourselves to see the Lord's protection, then we will get the benefit of seeing and establish and seeing with confidence how, yes, this is who I really am. I am a small, tiny, whiny, teeny, itsy, bitsy, beanie part of the Lord. And he's my eternal master, and there's nothing that's going to change that. I have an unique, individual, eternal relationship with the Lord, and I'm his, and he is mine. And that consciousness of the, if we cultivate that consciousness, then we learn to see and apply so many different points that we've been hearing in the Bhagavatam from all different places. And our vision becomes clarified. Just like, this is a little stretch to be an example of this, but go for it. So just like in a reading in the third canto, Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma's birth, the birth of Brahma from the lotus flower and so many things. Which reminds me of speak of mythology in a minute, okay? Thanks. So the birth of Lord Brahma from the lotus flower. And when he first becomes conscious of, conscious because he's self-born, whatever. When he first becomes conscious of who he is and where he is. What's happening is the winds and the water are creating the lotus, are making the lotus flower totter. The lotus flower in which he's standing, his whole existence is based on that lotus flower, and it's tottering due to those high winds and the destructive waves in the water. So he looks out and all he sees is darkness. And he can't figure out. Just like when you're here in the morning before Brahma Muhurta, before the sun gets up, everything is happening all around, but because it's all dark, if you're in here, you have no clue what's going on outside. And then gradually as the sun comes up, then you see, oh, the trees, yep, they're still there. Oh, the car's in the front. Oh, there are people are walking. They were there earlier, perhaps. Maybe not the people, but they were there earlier. But because we couldn't see, we didn't have the eyes to see, you're just thinking you're alone. So Brahma, he's on the top of this lotus flower. He's looking down, and he doesn't even see Lord Vishnu. He doesn't see anything. And he's trying to figure out the source of his existence. Makes his own endeavor, can't find it, goes down and he hears, tapa, tapa. And he knows that he should do penance and austerity. So the significance of that is that we can't figure out on our own endeavor our position. We need to be enlightened by the Supreme Lord. So once he does his 100 celestial years, which is a really long time, of penance and austerity, he becomes enlightened. The Lord becomes pleased with him, and he becomes and the Lord enlightens him from within. And then everything is still the same, except now he can see. He couldn't see where he was. He couldn't see his position. He couldn't see the Lord. He couldn't see anything. Everything's the same, except that because Krishna was pleased with him, then his heart and mind were purified, and then he could understand. So similarly, for ourselves, we're neophytes in the process of in a great endeavor for self-realization. We're just beginners, and we're so fortunate to be beginning in this process of bhakti yoga under Srila Prabhupada's guidance and the acharya's guidance. So everything is there waiting. All realization, all transcendental realization is there waiting us. And we just have to put in our time, put in our endeavor, put our heart and soul into trying to please Krishna. And patiently, with endeavor, with enthusiasm, as Rupa Goswami explains in Nectar of Instruction, avoid things that which are meant to be avoided, and take to the process of Krishna consciousness, and everything will gradually be revealed. Don't be impatient, but understand everything takes, even when the big Mahavishnu, when Karana Dakshai Vishnu, while he's lying on the ocean and the universes are emanating, he's so huge that universes are emanating from the pores, from his pores. Those universes are coming out in seed form, just like, and from that seed they're growing, and from that growing, and then Lord Brahma does his thing with the living entities, then the living entities take, and they're developing in so many ways. Everything takes time. We're unfortunately habituated in this age of wanting instant. We want instant this, instant gratification, instant food, instant whatever, instant pleasure, or instant varieties of pleasure, so many things. But everything takes time to develop. So be patient in your endeavor in Krishna consciousness. Don't be lackadaisical, but be patient and endeavor with enthusiasm and determination, and gradually everything will be revealed. Thanks for reminding me about mythology. So if somebody's coming and hearing about these fantastic stories, Lord Brahma's creation from the lotus, sprouting from a lotus flower, and let us speak of where that lotus flower grew from. I mean, all of these amazing, amazing stories. How for the modern scientific mind, it appears like it's mythology. But for a faithful devotee who can just understand how small we are in relationship to the Lord, and how if we say that God is great, it's so easy. God is great. God is love. God is this. God is almighty. But to have faith, we don't, in other philosophies and other religions, they don't come close to explaining the greatness of the Lord or his potency as Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures do. But when we, so when we see how great the Lord is and how small our capacity is, then how can we think? And what have we experienced in our life? So how can we think that we've experienced everything so that we could say, oh, this can't possibly be true? That's said from a position of ignorance, not of enlightenment. They're more ignorant. But someone who's more enlightened, that's what one of the meanings of Brahman. Brahman means broad-minded. Broad-minded how? By hearing the Vedic literature. Your mind, your conception of who we are, who the Lord is expanded through the Vedic literature. It's expanded, and therefore you can see, oh yes, anything is possible. And what is my experience? One time one devotee was questioning, and I can't remember exactly the question that the devotee made, but for the sake of this class, I'm going to say he was questioning, like, say, the position of Brahma being born from the lotus flower. How is that possible? And Prabhupada said to him, what have you experienced? You haven't even, you only experienced the inside of your mother's womb. So in other words, you don't know anything. So how can you sit there and say, oh, and just with a brush of a hand, just, you know, dismiss all this great literature. So there are many things. So that's one of the things when you read the Vedic literature. From our verse today, Prabhupada pointed out, a verse in purport from the sixth canto, Prabhupada pointed out that the Puranas or the Itihasas, these old histories, they're telling stories from not only this universe, but other universes, and they're not necessarily in chronological order. That also throws off, you know, a modern scientific mind. You know, it throws it off because they're expecting things to progress in a certain way. But it's telling stories from this universe, from that universe, this incarnation, that incarnation, because they're stressing on the essence of the story. Just like the essence of the story of Ajamil, you know, it's nice to know that it took place millions and millions of years ago. But that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that Ajamil was saved by Krishna, by chanting his holy name. He was saved. Krishna came. Krishna never abandons his devotees. Never. Zero, ever. So the essence of the stories of the Vedic literature, the Puranas and the Itihasas and whatever, they're giving us these essences and focusing our attention on the proper in the proper place, not so much a chronological history of this and that, because what can your brain understand about millions of years ago? We were just reading again in the third canto, the division of time from the atom. And do you know that the Vedic literature has calculated the division of a second? A second, if a second is divided by 1,685.5 parts. And a certain thing, it's called a certain thing, I don't remember what it's called, a trasarenu or a nimesha or something something. And there's a whole list there in the 11th chapter. Do you happen to know that, Krishna Kripa? It's, yeah, it's the 11th chapter, third canto, somewhere. There's a chart of all the time, the visions of time, starting with one, you know, dividing the second by 1,600.5 parts. So, Hari Bol, I don't know why I said that, but it struck me. Sorry, you have to figure it out. Okay, you get to ask any questions, like is this lady really sane or what? No. Kalakanta can answer that one.
No.
No, right. That. He's right. He's correct. Questions or comments? Oh, good. Can you tell me what your name is?
Amanda.
Okay. Amanda. Okay, got it.
After hearing all of this, how could someone believe in the like the Mayavadi belief that they are God?
Good question, Amanda. Really good question. The thing is, the important thing is where and who and how you hear, who you hear from. So if a person hears from the proper source, there's no way that they can come to that conclusion. And that's why, as you become, and you sound like you're already familiar with Srila Prabhupada's book to a certain degree, Prabhupada's always hammering this point, how that illusion of thinking that I am God, it's imperfect, it's nonsensical. So, there in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse that explains that the absolute truth is understood in three phases. Brahman, which is the all-pervading feature, then Paramatma, which is a localized form of the Lord, and then Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his opulences and pastimes. So someone who's thinking that they're God, they're making progress to a certain degree, albeit. They're making progress in understanding that this material world is false, that I'm not my body, and this and that. And they're seeing that there's an energy, a spirit, or whatever. But they're misidentifying themselves with the whole. So if they hear properly, they can't. But oftentimes, like Pratik said way in the beginning, because people have different desires. Why someone gets entangled in that path, it's not by chance. It's by a misdirected desire to want to be supreme. We want to lord it over. We want to exhibit our whatever in a certain way, and then we get misdirected into that path. Often Prabhupada says, the last snare of Maya. So someone's making progress, and the last trap of Maya is to think that you're God. And because of that, one gets put in the washing machine again. You know? Sometimes when we take some of that information, like say that point that I just made, that they've made progress and then they get bewildered and they get put down into lower species of life again and again and again and again and again and again and again. You think, well, that's not fair. That's like really a bum deal for them. But actually, Krishna's, the whole process of creation is actually out of love. And all the living entities are here out of Krishna's kindness and love to rectify that mentality that somehow wants to be God, or wants to, even if it's not as gross as that, I'm not thinking that I want to be God. I just want to be the most happy, the most this, the most that, you know, pleasurable for me, which ultimately means I want to control everything my way and, you know, forget God. I want it for me. So that's a whole misplaced mentality when the living entity is created to give pleasure to the Lord. So another simple example Prabhupada gives over and over again, because it's given in the Vedic literature, is that of the hand. So the hand, when it's connected to the body, it works just fine. Cut it off and it's there on the ground, it's never going to be happy separate. It has to be connected to function and feel good. It has to be connected to the rest of the body. So the living entity, that's our position. We have to be connected. In order to be properly situated, we have to be connected in purity, in love, and in with the Lord directly in some way. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
It's a lot easier to market.
Sorry.
Another thing that the impersonal idea is more popular because it's easier to market
be God than eternal servitude.
Kalakanta is always expert at saying things succinctly. Because also, because why is that easier? I'll be right with you. It's easier because we have a conception that servitude means slave, means bum deal, means short end of the stick. It means, you know, someone's always on your case and you, you know. But actually, servitude means that by pleasing the Lord, we're automatically more happy than we could ever be. Hare Krishna, would you like to make a comment or ask a question?
Yes, I was just going along with that question that was already asked.
Uh-huh.
I think everybody's vulnerable to manipulation, and that's like a manipulation to tell you when you're on the right path, to show you something different and see if you will choose that.
Mm.
But then if you apply knowledge like you have here, you'll see that when you look out, you don't really have as much control over your reality as you think. So then you would be able to see through the illusion. But some people, they get caught up in the ideal of like, oh, I could create my own reality. I'm God. So then they start seeing themselves as God and manipulating other people, but they never see through the illusion. And that was the choice that they made.
Good point. Thanks for that thoughtful point. Yeah. Mike.
Hare Krishna.
I was listening to a lecture by Dr. Richard Thompson yesterday, and he was talking about simulated worlds.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty far out. He was talking about, you know, artificial intelligence and all this good stuff. But he was saying how, you know, this whole world is basically Krishna's simulated world. So he can manipulate matter and manipulate situations, but all we can do is have the desire. So, you know, in a sense, it's like, you know, we're thinking we're doing all these things and, you know, this and that, but like literally all we're doing is having that like that urge, and then Krishna is like giving us the ability.
So, exactly.
Yeah, just keeping that in mind that like, this whole world is just like a video game. We're not the player.
Okay, and on that closing note, that'll be our meditation of the day. Which game are you playing? No, sorry. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada.